everything. One of the joys of having this meeting is that I have been given a lot of names over the last 2.5 years that it's been running of people who had great recovery. And they have since become very good acquaintances and friends. And one of the people that was our speaker was one of the early speakers that we had. I really enjoyed it. She's done service work at this meeting before. And she is, I think, a pure example of how great the program works. So I would like to introduce from Palm Springs, Hannah. Hannah, it is your meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe, for the service I can do. And my name is Hannah. I'm a compulsive overeater. Today is January 1st, and I want to wish you all a very happy New Year's, an abstinent New Year's, a healthy New Year, but one day at a time. That's what I learned, because New Year's was always a good day for me to make a New Year's resolution. I don't know about you, but after celebrating from Christmas through New Year's, you know, that was good for a New Year's resolution. From now on, I'm going to go on a diet. I'm grateful I don't have to do that anymore. And Joe gave me a couple of dates, and one of them was January 1st. And I thought, that's a good one to start a new year. One day at a time, of course. And my story is probably similar in a way to yours, but we all compulsive overeaters. And I think most of us are here because we had a problem with food. And I did, and I still do, because it doesn't go away. The only difference is I don't have to act out anymore. And this has been a kind of an interesting year for me. I had all kinds of medical stuff that's happening, and also all kinds of other stuff. And the only thing I hope it's going to get better is my way with technology, because that has given me a hard time. But I guess you've all gone through that, and hopefully that'll be okay one day at a time too. But if you're good at transposing numbers, I tell you how old I am. I'm 38, and I have been in this program for quite a while. And this was really the last house on the block for me, because I tried a lot of things. I didn't know I was a compulsive overeater for a long time, because I came from a family of more or less obese women. And the interesting part is I have a sister who's now in program and has been for about 5 years. She told me after many years in program, when she came, before that, our relationship was not that wonderful, and now it is. And she said, actually, you really weren't that overweight when you grew up. But I always felt that way. I always felt different. I always felt I was bigger than you. I always envied you if you were smaller than me. And in one way, I heard a speaker the other day from San Francisco, and he also came from Europe. And they really pushed exercises on us in sports. So I was a long distance swimmer when I grew up, and I rode my bicycle halfway through Germany where I grew up, and played basketball, and, you know, I was a runner, a sprinter, and it was really no wonder you can eat an awful lot. And I was still in half decent shape. The first time that I really realized that maybe weight and food had something to do with it was when I got married. And I got married in 1961. And all of a sudden, I realized that my weight was going up. I gained about 40, 45 pounds in not a very long period of time. And I couldn't understand the world anymore, because I married this wonderful, the most wonderful man in the world, and he was going to fix all the things that I didn't like in my life. But what I didn't know was, because I had no idea what it was, I married a full-blown alcoholic. They're very charming, but he didn't do what I wanted him to. And I thought he would make me happy. I never forget, I wrote into a diary every day, probably about all of you, all the things you did to me. And I wrote into my diary, and now I married the most wonderful man in the world. I don't have to write into my diary anymore. And that's when I should have started a new one, because it took quite a few years for him to find his program and more years than that for me to find mine. But I was always expecting someone and something to make me feel better. And I only found out in program that it's an inside job. I mean, you can't do anything for me, because any time that somebody gave me good advice, I resented it, because I was very smart. I was perfect and super smart when I came. After all these years, I'm not super smart anymore, and I'm also not perfect. One day at a time, I can survive in this program. And the feelings that I had about not fitting in, I remember those way, way back when I was actually a very small child. Because I never felt I belonged. I always felt that if I would go someplace else, it would be a lot better. And I worked my way halfway around the world. And I live in California in Palm Springs, and I was on my way to Australia. But fortunately for me and for my husband, he found a program and he wasn't going to go anywhere anymore. But I traveled from Europe to Canada to California, and I was going to Australia because I always knew if I would go someplace else, it would be better because the people would be nicer. I didn't know until I came to program and until I started working the steps that I had to change, that maybe it had something to do with me. I never knew that, or maybe, I don't know, even if somebody had told me, I would have never acknowledged it. So I grew up in a kind of an interesting time. I was born 3 months before the Second World War started. And of course, I wasn't overweight as a very small child because things got pretty bad and I actually ended up having malnutrition. And the only reason I'm telling you that is right after the war stopped, they tried to pep us back to life. And going back in history, I find that's when I first discovered that I had a compulsion towards sugar as something. I didn't know it then. We had to line up in the gym and we all had to swallow a spoon of cod liver oil. Now, if you know what cod liver oil is, it's not the best tasting thing in the world. But I thought if you can swallow, it can't be too bad. And everybody else, my little peers, they screamed bloody murder and they tried to bribe us so we would go back the next day. And for the first time in my life, I was 5 years old, I got my first piece of my binge food, chocolate, and it wasn't even as big as my thumbnail. But I thought, you know, this was heaven. And everybody ran away. And you know what I did? I went to the end of the line. I was going to swallow another piece of cod liver oil in order to get another piece of chocolate. And that was my favorite binge food until I came to program. It probably still is, except I don't have to eat it anymore if I don't want to. But those are the things that reminded me that maybe that was an indication, looking back through inventory, that maybe there was something a little different about me because the others just wanted to get away because they didn't want to go back. I would have done anything for another piece like that. But anyway, things got a little better, but I still never felt better. And I always felt insecure. And I always knew that it would be better someplace else. And I was a bookworm in those days. I used to read a lot of books. And I loved the explorations of Sven Hedin or Scott in Antarctica and all those places. And I thought, if I could only be someplace else, I know that it would be better. And so I planned to leave. But I was always a very law-abiding citizen, cash register honors, et cetera. So I had to wait until I was old enough to save enough money to leave the country. And I was 19 when I did. And I got to Montreal. And all of a sudden, too, I didn't exercise that much anymore. And I met this wonderful man who I married in a hurry so that nobody else could get him because he was very good looking. And then all of a sudden, my weight went up. I don't know, about 60 pounds. And then I saw someone who had lost weight. And that started my diet career. And every time somebody lost weight, how did you do it? And I would have done anything to be thin. I mean, even if it had killed me. And I know it does kill a lot of people. I'm very grateful that it didn't kill me. So if they told me what they did, I would do it too. And I was fortunate or unfortunate enough, I worked for a pharmaceutical company in Montreal. And in those days, you could get the diet pills galore. There was no prescription. I'd go to the doctor. And I'm very grateful that I really wasn't the smartest one in the world, because if he would tell me one before breakfast, lunch, and dinner, I would do that. I didn't find out until I came to program that people said, oh, that happened to me, but I doubled up. So sometimes it's very good not to be too smart. But anyway, I blamed always everything on other people and places and things. So, of course, I wanted to get away from there. And also at that time when I was married, I blamed a lot of things on my husband, right or wrong, I don't know. But anyway, I was not about to change. But he was a good excuse. And I was going to get him away from his bad friends because now it was him that could not take care of me and be as good as I wanted him to because his friends had an influence over him. And we had to party all the time. And I would sit there like, you know, as straight as a beanpole, and would not eat or drink or anything. I would just sit there. And I was very miserable. I never knew how to be happy until I came to this program and started to work it. But anyway, I started to work out the papers to come to California. And my husband didn't care less at that time. And so we came down here. And you know what? Things didn't change. He still didn't treat me the way I needed to be treated. And I still knew what to do. And when I told you, you still didn't accept it and you did what you wanted to. And I was so upset. But every time my weight shot up, I found a new diet. And I'm very grateful that I didn't kill myself, because I did a lot of things. And some of you have probably done the same thing. But I also learned things in OA. The only thing I never did, I never had my jaws wired shut. And I met a lady in program, and she told me that. And if she had said that before I came to program, I probably would have gone and done it if I could have possibly have done it. But I said, oh my God, I'm glad I didn't. And then she told us that she was drinking through a straw, all the things that, you know, had to melt in order. And so it's a crazy world to live out there. And I'm forever grateful that I found this program. And it doesn't mean I'm perfect today, because I'm not. And I always thought I was perfect, and I tried so hard to be perfect, and there's no such thing. I got a little upset today. I don't know what it was, but I can acknowledge it. I can get over it. I can talk to someone about it. That's another thing. I kept everything inside, because you can't show anybody how you feel, because then they know you're not perfect. And so anyway, when I was down here in California, I thought things aren't any better than they were in Montreal and Germany. So let's get the hell out of here. And I started working on the papers to Australia. Australia is a beautiful country. I've been there since I've been in program. But people wouldn't have been any good there either, because I was the first one to arrive. And as long as I was the way I was, nothing changed. You know, the saying, things have to change, don't change until they change. And that was me. Because as long as I didn't know there was something wrong with me, as long as I blamed everybody else in the world, how could I possibly change and better my life? And I always thought food would fix it. And so when I came to California, I continued this diet cram and, you know, all that stuff, and nothing worked. And then something happened, which today I know is a miracle. In those days, I resented it. My husband found his program and he changed his life. Now, you would think I would be terribly happy because he changed his life and he didn't do all the things that I thought he shouldn't be doing and probably shouldn't have been doing, but that I had no control over. But instead, I resented it even more. So when he went to some of his meetings, and he went just about every night, as most people do when they get to program, I would sit at home, watch television, my little blanket wrapped around me. It must have been as cold as it is right now in Palm Springs, because I remember it was very cold, and eating up a storm and doing all kinds of crazy things with the food. And when he came home, of course, I knew I had been to those meetings. I heard what they're doing. They don't do what they used to do. I thought I wouldn't want him to see it, but I was very, very miserable. And all of a sudden, one time I went with him, I was gracious enough to go, and somebody lost weight. My usual question: how did you do it? And that person said, Overeaters Anonymous. And I thought, that sounds awful. By that time, I kind of accepted that Alcoholics Anonymous, the words were acceptable, but Overeaters Anonymous, but she talked me into going. Now, this was 2 years before I actually came. And of course, I could only go to a meeting if you didn't know that I was going there for myself. So I found someone else who weighed 100 pounds more. We went to a meeting 50 miles from home, and I immediately identified with all the differences, not the similarities. It's not recommended. We had a wonderful guy there, and I see sometimes a picture where somebody shows his pants, and that guy showed us his pants, and they were that big, and he was only that big. And I could not identify with that because I never wore pants. First of all, I mean, it was a pair of jeans. But what I didn't admit to was, of course, that I made my own clothes. And in those days, you know, we didn't have very much money. So it was a good thing that I knew how to make my own clothes. I never got bigger than a size 12. And that's not all that big. But patterns are very patient. I would cut just a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And I was still a size 12. So what did I do? I fooled myself. I did not fool anybody else. I don't know why it was so important for me to fool it. Think that you had to believe that there was nothing wrong with me. Or maybe you thought I had a thyroid condition. Now I do after 40 some years in program, but that's a different story. But I always tried to fool myself, trying to think I could fool you. So, of course, I immediately identified with all the differences, not the similarities. And we suggest in program to identify with the similarities. And also we suggest go to 5 or 6 meetings before you make up your mind. Well, I went to one, and it took me 2 years before I got back again. Again, at one of those meetings, somebody lost weight. How did you do it? She told me. I said, doesn't work for me. And, you know, she did. And she asked me, how many meetings did you go to? And for once I was honest and I said, one. And she said, haven't you heard in this other program your husband belongs to that you go to 5 or 6 meetings before you make up your mind? And I didn't know what to say. I didn't really have an answer. So I made a deal with her that I would go and meet her at an OA meeting, but only because she was going to meet me there. And it was in a church in Pasadena on Colorado Boulevard. And of course, there were night meetings in those days and, you know, face-to-face meetings. And I went to the church and I was so worried that somebody might see me. You know, they didn't have a big sign out there, Overeaters Anonymous, but I looked right and left and watched the cars. And I thought, what if anybody sees that I'm going to Overeaters Anonymous? They would have never known. They would have thought I was going to a church, right? But I was always predicting and always worried about things. So I got into the meeting and the people were kind of nice. And one of them was really nice. I had met her at one of those other meetings with her husband. And she and I, of course, wouldn't talk to each other. And she had been in OA for a year. And she came up to me and she welcomed me and talked to me as if we had been the best of friends. And we just kind of gave each other dirty looks in the other program when we saw each other. And I couldn't understand the world anymore. And she became my sponsor. Now, I had no idea what a sponsor was. So I was kind of adopted. And she stayed my sponsor for over 30 years until she passed away. And we had a wonderful relationship. But anyway, she asked me if I would be willing to do what was asked of me, call her every day. And in those days, we were asked to commit our food if I would do that. And I didn't like it. But for some reason, that's something in my head kind of said, maybe you should try to do that. And I was handed this gray sheet. And a lot of you probably have been around for a long time still remember that gray sheet. And I worked that gray sheet 150%. I mean, like I always say, I counted my string beans and the weight came off. And I'm grateful we don't have that anymore because it really was a diet. And today we have wonderful pamphlets that replaced it and we have choices and all that. But you see, there was a tiny little sentence on there at the bottom that was even smaller than the small print that said, check with a nutritionist or your doctor. But of course, I didn't have to read that. I mean, that was, I didn't have to do that. You know, I was still a little on the perfect side. And so, but the weight came off and I all of a sudden, I got very arrogant and self-righteous because look, my weight is coming off. I mean, I lost about 30 pounds. My top weight was about 200. And so I thought I was doing pretty good. And I kind of judged people who weren't following the gray sheet. And it's not a good idea to do that because we're all doing our best. And for some of us, it takes a little longer. But I had this perfect program. Now, I knew the steps. I had learned them. I had memorized them. But you know something? That doesn't do any good either. Memorizing the steps, I mean, those days, my memory was a lot better than today, is not the same as working the steps or living the steps. And so Christmas came along, and this was 45 years ago. And I had this perfect gray sheet abstinence. And we went up to Santa Rosa, and I knew they wouldn't have my perfect abstinent food there. So I packed my cooler, and we went up to Santa Rosa. And Christmas Eve, my girlfriend's cute little son, he came along, and he handed me a cookie. All right. Maybe if I had a better program, I would have taken that cookie and said, no. Or I would have had it and said, oh, my God, what are you doing to yourself? No, I didn't. I ate everything in sight. And I mean, and I started to be more and more miserable. But when I start, I can't stop. And my husband knew what I was trying to do. And he very seldom really said anything or criticized me. He was very supportive, especially of what I was trying to do since I'd come to OA. But he walked by and he said to me, do you know what you're doing to yourself? And like the good little binging wife, I told him to go to hell. And I kept binging until the day was ended. And the next morning, they took pictures, you know, because it was a holiday. You can really see how miserable I am. The misery will be refunded instantly, I know. And I don't want to do it again, God willing, one day at a time. And so I thought, okay, I've blown this too. And I'm not perfect anymore. So I can't go back there. I can't tell those people that I've done this. And the lady who was so kind to me, who became my sponsor, she was always on my mind. And on January 6th, and we're between my last binge Christmas and January 6th, is when I started to abstain, I was going to call her And you know, it took me several days because I don't know, some of you remember that 1,000-pound phone that we tried to pick up, and it was so heavy and I couldn't. I got closer and closer, and all of a sudden, I don't know what happened. I never believed in miracles, but today I do, because that was one. I picked up the phone and I told her what I had done. She didn't criticize me. She just said, why don't you come back and I'll meet you at the meeting. She met me at the meeting, and thanks to higher power and the program and all the people in it, I've been able to abstain. Now, there's no such thing as perfect abstinence. I mean, I can stay away from sugar and certain things that really triggered me, but sometimes maybe I eat a little bit more. But over the 45 years, I've been very, very fortunate that my weight has never really fluctuated that much, and that I'm aware of it, that I'm a compulsive overeater every day. And what I'm doing every day today to keep my abstinence, keep my program, as I said, I did not believe in miracles. Today I know it was a miracle that I picked up the 1,000-pound phone and came back. And I also do believe in something that's bigger than myself. I had a difficult time with that. I come from a non-religious background. So, of course, anything was Christian, because the big book, you know, was written by Christians. They have a big Christian background. We didn't have much literature at the time. But I remember we had one pamphlet, and some of you might remember it. And it says, before you take that first compulsive bite. And that was the old one. I mean, the new one looks kind of prettier, but I'm attached to it, so I'm always keeping it. But anyway, and my sponsor handed me that, and I have been trying to do what I'm trying to do every day. And I try to keep it simple because, you know, this is a simple program for complicated people, and I definitely made my life complicated. But I get up in the morning, and the day does not start for me unless I say my little morning prayer. And it consists of something very simple. I just say, please, God, help me to get through this day. Help me to keep my abstinence, and help me to accept what comes my way. When I came, I was in my late 30s. I was super healthy. Now I have all kinds of things. So I kind of add it and accept the pain that comes my way. I just want to be sure that I accept everything. And also, please help me to treat others the way I would like to be treated. Because I could snap at you, but don't you dare, you know, snap at me. I mean, that's the way I felt all my life. And it's been at times a rocky road, but I have been coming back to this program, abstaining ever since. And things happen, you know, when I finally got the idea that, hey, I do have a program that I can live with one day at a time. Life comes along and it's not always pleasant. Of course, you know, I've been around for a long time, so you lose people you love. My parents, and then 25 years, I lost that husband, and we had a wonderful relationship. When both of you have a program, I mean, it's wonderful, but it wasn't meant to be. And at first I was very angry, but again, I had the sponsor that I had for a long time, and she says, you know, there is a reason for everything, and you're hurting like hell, but that you have to rebuild your life. And I learned to rebuild my life. And you know what a good way is to rebuild your life? Get into service. And I had also been secretary at our meeting. And at that time, we kind of started our first intergroup in the Foothill Gate area where I live. And so when I got there, they immediately asked me if I wanted to keep the books and be the treasurer. And I did. But I kind of got out of it because I took care of my husband. And she got me back into going to the meetings. And people in program are really kind of persistent. They wouldn't leave me alone. I didn't really want to go to a meeting, but they came by. I just want to come by for a cup of coffee, or let's go out to lunch, or this or that. I mean, I was never away from the program, but I thought my life was ended. And maybe my program wasn't good enough, but it didn't take very long. And I got back to program. I learned to rebuild my life, and I got into service. And you know, service is wonderful. I never knew. And this is the kind of service too, because I'm not really that excited about speaking, because I hear those wonderful speakers and I say, do I really have something to say? But you know, we have our story, and that's all there is to it. And I try not to say no when I'm asked to give service. And so I was in the intergroup. We retired, moved out to the desert here in Palm Springs. And that's not too long after that, my husband passed away. And I got back into intergroup. I was asked to give service at the region. And I was, you know, I was privileged and blessed to be events coordinator. And I had to go and find hotels for the region, you know, for our convention. And that was so exciting. And I thought, oh my God, you can't do that. That's another one of my traits. If I'm asked to do something, oh my God, can I do it? But they kind of pushed me into it. You know, that was the most wonderful job I had in OA. I almost cried when I had to give it up because we have service times, you know, and time's out. And so I did that. And I loved every bit of it. And then, you know, okay, now it's time to go to world service. I don't think I'm ready for that. Yes, you are. And off I went to world service. And I was elected to do one of the jobs that Joe did. You know, Joe was the chair of the board at one time, but that was before my time. But I remember him. I was a delegate when he was the chair. So I did that. And it was a wonderful time. I mean, I was so zeroed in, and I always worked all my life. And I wasn't working when my husband passed away, but this gave me a purpose. And my purpose was to give back as much as I have gotten from this program, which is a heck of a lot. It's a life. Nobody in my family got to be past 70 because they were all overweight. So there was diabetes, and my mother smoked like a chimney, and I didn't do any of those things. And I'm grateful that I was fairly young, because the older we are when we get to the program, I think the more damage we can do to ourselves. So I was very healthy. I mean, I was as healthy as anything until I turned 80, even though I lied about my age being 38, but you know how to transpose that. And all of a sudden, you know, I got all these things, learning to accept life on life's terms. And it is so different, you know, and as I was complaining before the program, I had a lot of technology problems, but I always find somebody to help me. And you see, at one time before program, if you wouldn't fix things for me right away, I would have gotten very arrogant and very short. How dare you? After all, I'm paying you for this or that or the other thing. And today I'm grateful when somebody's trying to help me. And many times, you know, when they help you over the phone, yesterday I had to talk to someone. And I said, boy, you have helped me so much. If I could give you a gold star, I would, you know. And then I tried to write the review and stuff. That was so much against my grain, because I did not believe that I owed anybody to any. I didn't owe anybody anything, but you owed a lot to me, which I didn't get. And I remember an incident before I left Germany. I was 19 years old when I left. And I had, in those days, we didn't have computers, no technology. And a lady, I had to go to a government place, and she had to look for something, and there were files. And she was looking, and she was looking. It took a while. And the counter, for some reason, had a metal top. And I was so irritated that it took so long. I took my fingers, you know, and with the nail polish, they're pretty hard. And I went like this because it wasn't fast enough. And she had the audacity to turn around and say, could you stop that, please? That made me even madder. How dare she? Because I had a right, because she was so slow. I mean, if somebody says to me today, what a crazy life, I agree. It was a crazy life, but I made it that way. But I didn't know any different. I didn't know any different until I came to program, and until I heard all the stories. And I love speaker meetings, because I could never talk about how I felt. And here were these people they would get up in front of, and we had about 50 people when we had the meeting in Pasadena, and they would tell their story. And, you know, they would say something that I thought, nobody ever did that. And even though I did never broke any laws or anything like that, but I did so many things I was ashamed of. And all of a sudden, this person would get up there and would say that they did exactly the same thing I did. I thought, oh my God. And in one way, it made me feel better, because I was not the only one. And I was not as crazy as I thought I was. I just did crazy things because I didn't know any better. And I have been very blessed. I have one sister. Actually, it's my half-sister. And one time she said to me, yeah, you know, I'm actually your half-sister. We are very, very close. She said, I'm actually your half-sister, which is true. And I got mad at her. I said, what do you mean we're the best of friends? She said, well, because you only have as big as I am. And that was when she came to program. And so, but we have a wonderful relationship. And we could never talk about things, the feelings. There was always kind of an undercurrent, because most of us, you know, some of you might remember that show Father Knows Best if you're old enough. And I always thought, oh my God, if I only had a life like that, I would have been a lot better, you know, getting along in life. And do you know what? I saw one of the actors at one of their 12-step conventions. It was a show. But I didn't know that. I thought it was real, and that was what a real family is like. And there are very few families are like that. There are problems everywhere. I mean, I've never met anybody who said my childhood was so wonderful that I never had a complaint. I had loving parents. You know, I mean, that's life. If you have had it, you're lucky. I didn't. But it's okay. I still did not have to react. I think it runs in families, because why were all my relatives coming before me, my mother, my grandmothers, why were they all overweight? Probably because they ate over their feelings too. And it's the same with alcoholism. Now, I never knew what that was because nobody drank in my family. Now, I have a little feeling that maybe my father might have been, because I saw a couple of pictures, but he got killed when he was 27 years old. And would you believe that I resented that, even though he got killed during the war? Do you think someone at 27 wants to get killed because he's a fighter pilot? No, but I took everything personally. He did that to me. I mean, if that is not crazy, I don't know what is. And this program really has shown me, and still shows me every day, it's one day at a time, and do the best you can. And things come your way. If somebody says something that hurts you a little bit, you can talk about it. If somebody says something you disagree with, you can tell them, well, this is how I feel. And sometimes you can agree to disagree. It seems that easy, but it was so difficult, because I always had to try to convince you that whatever I did or said was right. And it's not. I have been wrong many times. And even in programs sometimes, I tell you, if you are working for one of the regents or trustees, so there are differences. And I learned, you know, to say, yeah, okay, I hope I feel this way about something and somebody else feels that way about something. That's why we have group conscience meeting or have discussions in intergroups or regions or everywhere. Because, you know, we talk about it and majority rules. If everybody agrees at the group conscience meeting that it's gray and not black, okay, we go with gray, and I have to get along with that, and I have to agree that that's so, because I know I'm not always right. Even just writing a format for a meeting, I always have somebody else look at it, and then we get to the group or to the intergroup, wherever it goes, and then talk about it, and people can make suggestions. But I took everything personally. It was always against me, and I know it's not. And my life has changed completely. I'm grateful for every day. And you know, when I came, I was not quite 40, I was 38. And life was so terrible that I would think, oh my God, I may have 40 years left, you know, and it was so dreary. And now I'm 83, I'll go on 84 and wake up in the morning and I say, oh my God, I'm 83 years old. I hope I have a few years left, because I'm having fun. With the pain, I'm walking with the purple cane. It's beautiful, but I'm still walking with the purple cane for support. And I can't drive at night anymore because it scares me to death, so I don't. And there are lots of restrictions that come with age. And I've been privileged to see so many places in the world, and I've been privileged to go to so many meetings in different places. I have friends in Jerusalem. I went to a meeting in New Zealand one time in Auckland, and somebody was gracious enough to pick me up. Faith Joe, you might remember her. She had somebody pick me up because she wasn't there. And they took me to the meeting. And, you know, in OA, I've learned to talk to everybody. And at first, when I before program, I would never talk to you until I was properly introduced. That's the way you talk to people. And I was standing there talking to people and or to a person. And all of a sudden, somebody tapped me on the shoulder and said, hi, Hannah, it's nice to see you in New Zealand. So far away from home, it was somebody I met at World Service. And the reason I met that person is because I gave service. And service, I'm not doing it for you. I'm doing it for me, because it keeps me close to the program. It's so easy at times when things are not going too well to maybe try to hide in my house, in my place, and say, okay, you know, pull the blanket over your head. And I used to do that before, you know, when I was binging. And sometimes maybe the thought comes along that I just don't want to go to a meeting. And then lo and behold, somebody calls me and says, do you want to go for coffee after the meeting? Or can you pick me up, or something like that? HP is always working, you know, behind the scenes. And I never believed in that. I had lots of arguments with my sponsor about that. And we, you know, in program, we do not talk about religion. We talk about spirituality. We do not talk about politics. And it's wonderful, because if we would allow that, AA would have fallen apart long ago because, you know, they had the Washingtonians, the Oxford group, and then they brought all this stuff. And I'm so grateful that we wrote the traditions. But anyway, I like to do that today. I like to give service, and I like also to be part of. I never felt part of anything or any organizations, even though I was pushed into something when I grew up and I didn't like it. But today I feel part of, and it's nice to get to know people. And if you don't show up to the meeting where you usually go, and I'm always punctual, that's one of my things. Maybe it's a strike against me. I don't know, when we had face-to-face meetings, if I wasn't there half an hour before, I was late. So if the time came and the meeting was about to start, because I was always early, someone would call me and they thought something might have gone wrong getting to the meeting. And it's important to find a home group where I show up all the time, because that's the only way people get to know me. And no matter what I did in my life before program, I was always a visitor. I never belonged. And I always, as soon as somebody said boo, I was out of there because you didn't like me. And the other thing I had was there were a couple of people when I went to school, and they were, you know, always the center of attention. And I really wanted them to be my friend. And they didn't want to be my friend. And I took that very personally. And today, it's not important. I mean, no, you know, I love everybody. And we try not to single everybody out and make them feel more important. That's one thing I have a problem with at times. You know, you heard the word guru, and sometimes we have speakers and they go all over and everybody knows. That's another reason why we don't put names on flyers when we advertise a workshop or, you know, whatever it is that we do, conventions. We don't tell you Joe is speaking or this or that, because, you know, I thought about it at first and I thought, oh, it would be nice. And then I figured out the reason for that is that all of a sudden, you know, you might have said today that Joe is speaking here and something might have happened. He might have had the sniffles and he couldn't make it, but his name was on there. And then all of a sudden Hannah shows up and I really want to hear Joe. And I would have been so disappointed, even though the main reason is it's against the traditions to do that. But that made sense to me because my sponsor had to explain it to me as if I was in first grade. And I did understand that we're all equal. We're all the same. Nobody's more important. And you all know about the upside down pyramid. You know that the people who give the service, thank you, Joe. I know my sister told me I can probably talk for 3 hours. Anyway, the pyramid. And the people who give the most service, the trustees, they are at the bottom of the pyramid. And the important people, that's all of you. You're on top. And every in between waits on you, serves you. You know, we're there to help you. We're helping to keep the program going. And I never understood that. When I first came to a meeting and somebody spoke, or that was the secretary, and we had to get up to the front at that time, and when they elected me secretary, and I had to tell you how long I'd been in program and how long I'd abstained, and also how much weight I'd lost. We don't do that anymore, right or wrong, and I don't really care, but that's the way we did it. So if I had benched, I would have had to resign. So a little bit of pride was there too, and I made it until my time was up. But those are the things I thought, somebody is important, the speakers. I figured they paid somebody for it. Nobody gets paid. You know what the payment is? That I'm still here. That's how I get paid, and I'm overpaid. And one day at a time, I hope I'm going to hang in there for a while because I like it here. And I like all the friends I've made. I talked to a sponsee who retired in Rhode Island. I made friends, and some of you are here. We like to talk once a week or more often, and it's wonderful. And maybe I never meet you, but somehow there's something we have in common, the camaraderie, which I never had. You try to go out there and talk to someone on the street. Wait a minute, can I tell you? I mean, you know, this is what happened to me and I feel terrible about it. They look at you and say, you're crazy. But in program, I can go and I say to call Nancy or maybe Marlene and say, oh my God, this is what happened. And I got so upset over it. Isn't that awful? And then we laugh about it. Laughing is another thing. My husband was always making fun of me. He was always saying, I was sitting on my sense of humor. I want you to know I got up. I'm not sitting on it anymore. I laugh about a lot of things. I tell the story sometimes. I had a hip operation earlier this year. And the doctor came in the day after and he said to me, I want you to know that these hip operations are guaranteed now for 20 years. I said, that's wonderful. Now, will you guarantee that I live to be 102, because I was 82 at the time? And he thought it was hilarious. Now, at one time, I mean, I probably would have been upset. Oh, my God, I'm not going to outlive, you know, that repair job they did on me. I was always comparing, looking for the bad part or the sad part in it. And today, I always like to look at the part that's fun. I enjoy life. I enjoy life every day. And I didn't go to a big party, you know, last night. I mean, I'm always happy when I'm by myself on a holiday and I say, let all the crazies drive out there. I'm staying home and I can go to a meeting here or to a marathon, part of a marathon there. And I'm having myself a good time, but I could never do that by myself. I was never happy being by myself with myself. And today I am. And the program has taught me that. And if I get into a place where I don't feel quite that good and start feeling a little sorry for myself, hey, that 1,000-pound phone doesn't weigh that much anymore. I can pick it up and I can call you. And I had a little thing that happened and is happening in my family. And I just wanted to kind of pave the way a little bit. So I called Joe and I said, you know, would you be willing to talk to this person if this person really would like some help? And immediately he said, yes. And, you know, those are the things that I can do. But on the other hand, I don't go and say, hey, I know what you should do about your problem. Nobody could have ever told me that you have a problem and you need to go to Overeaters Anonymous. I had to figure that out all by myself, because I was one of those people. And I started out talking about a resolution, New Year's resolution, all these resolutions. I mean, all the diets, and every one of them was wonderful. And I just heard about, I had never heard about this diet before. And a woman was saying, I lost 60 pounds. And the weight is off and it will never come on again. How many times did I say that? It came on after, you know, it came off a little bit during a diet, and then a little bit more than I started with came on again. And today I laugh about it. But at one time I would say, oh, that's really good. I better go get that. Whether it was a pill, a shot, or a doctor, or what have you. I mean, I was all for it as long as I would be thin. I always thought thin was well. It's not. My head's still kind of crazy, and that's okay, as long as I know it is. And if I can't find a way out of something, if I think, oh my God, this is really, what am I going to do? Pick up the phone and call someone. And somebody else might say, and nobody ever told me, no, that's not a good idea, don't do that. They might say, have you thought about it? And that's what I learned in program two. My sponsor never told me, no, you don't do this, don't do that. She would say, have you thought about what might happen? Or have you tried this? I mean, we don't tell people off. And I like that, because I was told in my life many, many times what to do and what not to do. And today, nobody tells me, but they understand how I feel and that I have, at times, my head is a little screwy, and that's okay, too. I can talk to you. I found my family in Overeaters Anonymous, and I'm very happy every day, and I'm grateful every day when I wake up, you know, because I love this program. I love to be here. And my passion was traveling. And after I got to program, and it wasn't that I was running away, I just wanted to see the world. And I've seen Australia, and I'm glad I live in Palm Springs. It's a beautiful country. And that's one thing I had to cut back on. I mean, I went to see my sister, but then I wasn't traveling around. So now I'm waiting for the doctor to tell me, yeah, it's okay for you to travel again, because there's still a couple of places I want to go to if I possibly can. But it gives me something to look forward to, but I'm not obsessing on anymore. And, you know, after New Year's, if I had planned a trip in June, I probably would have been obsessing over it now. And probably a month before I go, I would start packing my suitcase. I don't do those things anymore, and accepting life on life's terms. It sounds so easy, but it's so difficult. But the program helps me do that. And I think I talked long enough, Joe, and I hope I said something that you can identify with. If not, next week we have another speaker. Thank you.
Ausgezeichnet. Ich liebe dich.
Oh, okay. Well, your accent is a little difficult to understand, but I got it.
Time since I've been in Germany. Thank you very much. It was wonderful. I said excellent. Thank you very much. I love you. So anyway, you know, I have a friend who, whenever he shared, the first thing he said was that I think Father Knows Best should be sued for false advertising.
Mm, yep.
And so those of you who remember Father Knows Best will probably think about that.